Welcome to the Arts and Antique Radio Show, where your host, nationally recognized certified appraiser Elizabeth Stewart, Santa Barbara's treasure sleuth, will help you put a value on the treasures in your own home.
Every time it rains, pennies from heaven. Don't you know each cloud contains pennies from heaven?
So let's find out. How valuable is it?
Hello, 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 Santa Barbara. It's your chantress of everything valuable and beautiful, Elizabeth Stewart. And across my desk, a wonderful email from the public relations department of the theater in Ojai, and announcing that Richard Camp, who is her artistic director at the Ojai Art Center Theater for 3 years, et cetera, and now he is AD for Joan Kemper's Ojai Performing Arts Theater. And he's written a play about him and his life. And that's Richard Camp. And I've always enjoyed speaking with Richard. And I had no idea about his past, except I did know that, you know, he was a three-time Emmy nominee, writer, producer, and director. And he won the Emmy for writing the NBC series Hot Hero Sandwich. And he received a Writers Guild citation for CBS daytime drama Capital, which, gosh, I wonder if that has any relevance today. And he produced for the Food Network and a writer for ABC Network News, et cetera, et cetera. The credits go on. But, you know, this is a semi-autobiographical original comedy performed by Ojai Performing Arts Center Theater. And this is about Richard's life. It's a comedy about people who have been dealt the bottom card from the deck, but lived, thrived, and survived. So it starts out by announcing that Richard, up to the time he was about 5 years old, he thought everyone in the world was deformed in some way because everyone in my immediate family was. So, the show is called Lordy Mercy, and I thought, okay, so last night I was looking, Richard, for appropriate music, and I put into the YouTube search, you know, white trash music, and I thought, okay, maybe that that'll work. But I want to know what, tell me about, okay, this is what I want you to do. Set the scene for us. Describe the house in which you grew up.
Well, there were, first of all, hi and welcome, and good to see you again. I grew up in several houses because we moved around all the time. We were a very peripatetic family, and, you know, sometimes it was just, we had to move somewhere just because we couldn't afford to where we were living in the first place. So, see, I was born in North Carolina. But when we were four, my stepfather moved us to Michigan, and I really grew up in Michigan. But it was an entirely southern enclave in Michigan because not only my family moved up there, but many of the relatives moved up there. They moved up there, and this was before the hippies, and they all shared a big house, and we just tried to get along as best we could. So, and as you said in the introduction, you know, up until I was about five, you know, I thought everyone was had something wrong with them and needed some fixing, because they were. They were just. I can tell you all about those if you want. Yeah,
definitely. I want to hear that. But I thought, you know, visually, the you know, I got the sense that you lived in a Southern style big house with a bunch of people around you. There were relatives and friends that were also from the South. Where in North Carolina did you move from?
I was born in Gastonia, which is about almost exactly halfway between Asheville and Charlotte, near the southern border of with South Carolina.
Okay. And so I'm familiar with North Carolina. My son was at Duke, which is nothing like what you're talking about, but we did get a chance to tour around North Carolina, and yeah, it's a whole different, even the food is different. It's a whole different, yeah, whole different thing.
Yeah. I think that, you know, the tagline is, you know, it's a Southern fried comedy, y'all. It's got, you know, broken relatives, broken religion, and grits.
So,
That's the kind of story it's going to be. But it's the concept basically is how all of these people who had these I hate to use the word deformities, but it was just, you know, people had some things wrong with them, but they didn't really bother them. Everybody was just family, and so it didn't matter. But it's how the stepping off point in the play is the 5-year-old when he was 5 years old goes to his first funeral, and that's where he encounters all of these people in one place, and it's really the beginning of the character's consciousness of the concept of God, and how that fits into his entire worldview as he grows older and grows up to where I am now at a certain age.
Yes, and what was the concept of God?
Guess what?
What was the concept of God?
The absence of God? Yes.
No, what was the concept of God that sort of did you began your awakening?
Well, first of all, when you're 5 years old, you hardly know what God is.
Right.
So you're listening to I would go to the only churches I would go to were like Baptist churches, and so that was the overall view of God for me at the beginning. And so, you know, Baptist churches preaching to you that, you know, you have to be saved, you have to be born again, you have to accept Christ as your personal savior. All those words didn't quite make a lot of sense to me, and I was trying to put them all together and I'm trying to figure how they fit into the people that I was growing up with and how they lived and got along.
So, Richard, you write that your concept of God began at a graveyard ceremony. Did that actually happen to you?
Oh, yes. The first one of my mother's cousins was the first person I knew in a family or anyway that passed away. And there's a comedic part in the play where, you know, he didn't know what passed away meant. And so it's a totally new concept to a 5-year-old. What does passed away mean? He didn't understand. So he tried to ask his stepdaddy, and his stepdaddy got all confused and discombobulated to find it. But anyway, he's at the funeral, and the funeral of the cousin whose name was Jim, but everybody called him Jimbo because he weighed somewhere near 400 pounds. And so he died because he was in the hospital having a minor operation and something maybe to take out his gallbladder or his appendix. I didn't know what that was. Or if it did take it out, would that leave him weighing 399 pounds? I didn't know. So I was just trying to figure all this stuff out. And it was just, and so that initial first, you know, funeral was to him beginning to learn what God meant and what happened to you after you die. Because later in the play, we get to the point where I deal with my cancer. I had cancer 2 years ago and had to go through the treatment of that. And then I've combined all of those things and elements and put them together to an ending. So there you go.
So now you're do you actually have a 5-year-old performer, or is it how do you manage to get the voice of the 5-year-old into the play?
Well, I never lost my Southern accent if I wanted to. So when I started thinking about this, you know, when I was 5, this is the way I talked when I was 5. So I got that into my thing. Let me give you just a little excerpt from the beginning of the play.
Sure.
I was born in the Deep South, which is different from just plain old South. Deep South is like those documentaries you see about the dark depths of the ocean. The deeper you go, the scarier the creatures you bump into. But thank God or goodness or education, I managed to crawl out of the Deep South before I drowned in a moonshine bucket of dadgummit stagnabbits and dadburnets. Now, bear with me, because everything I'm going to tell you is the God's honest truth, except for the parts that ain't. Everybody in my worldview was deformed, but nobody ever used that word because, you know, that's just too big a word for everybody. So if you didn't know the word and nobody had ever said it to you, then your worldview didn't even include the very idea of deformity, because nobody in my family or circle of friends thought they were deformed. They just thought they were normal. except they didn't see, they didn't use that word either, because the idea of normal was never a question to somebody who didn't think anybody was abnormal. Now, you're most likely thinking I'm so dumb I can't put GPS in alphabetical order, but hang on. I'm going to tell you about all these folks, some of them maimed, some of them lame, some of them about to fall off the deep end, some of them already treading water, some of them smarter the whip, some of them that had to get naked to count to 21.
Get naked to count to 21.
Yeah, if you have to get naked to count to 21, then you can imagine that visual, huh?
Right, exactly. And what are you counting as you're naked there?
Yeah, 10 fingers, 10 toes, then you got to add one.
Right, exactly. I get it. Richard, how cool. How interesting. So when did you start writing the play, Lordy Mercy? And what was the impetus behind it? The beginning of, you know, what was the creative spark?
Well, I was thinking about it for quite a few years. And then during the pandemic, you know, can't really do much of anything. You're stuck in your house. So I said, well, let's just make this a play. Now, that's when I started writing it, you know, during the pandemic. And I initially thought it should not be a one-person show. I thought about having all those characters be in it. But then I thought it'd be just too difficult to cast this play with that number of characters. So I just turned it into a one-man show, and I think it's worked out pretty well.
So tell me exactly. So the stepdaddy with the crossed eye, a Baptist church piano player with missing fingers, a cousin with a backward club foot, et cetera, et cetera. So these are the characters. Now tell me, are these real people? Are they really from your background, or how much is elaboration?
Absolutely. They're all real people. I would say about 90% of the play is real. Like the piano player, like you said, she was the piano player at our Baptist church, but she was missing two fingers on her left hand. So she would bang out the rhythm with her left hand and play the melody with the right hand, and good enough to make it work. And people would say, well, she's just so good on the piano because Jesus moves her hand for her. Well, that as a five-year-old, that kind of made me kind of think, well, how can that be? Because as far as I know, Jesus was dead. But then they never explained that to me. But really, her husband, he worked in a machine shop. And one day he got his hand caught in the machine and tore off three fingers on his right hand. And those two hands fit together like a glove. When they held hands, it was like one hand.
Oh, that's amazing. Amazing. Okay, so tell me about the cousin with the backward club foot.
Well, he was married to Jimbo's sister. And Jimbo's sister, she had her a cleft palate, so she couldn't talk right. So people could hardly understand her, and her husband Glenn, he had a club foot. He could, and his right foot was turned around backwards. Now he could put a shoe and sock on, but as my stepdad has said, he could kick your butt coming and going.
So let me get the visual right. So he had a club foot, but it was on backwards.
Yes. Yes.
How did he walk, Richard?
Oh, with a big old limp. And yeah. Everybody called him Gimpy because everybody had a nickname back then. You know, I had another cousin who had a hunchback, and everybody called him Humpy. And then sometimes they call him Hopalong Cassidy, like the old movie cowboy Hopalong Cassidy. And
my goodness,
one of the points of the play is that they didn't mind being called that. They didn't feel embarrassed about it. It was just like something within the family, like. But only family could call him Humpy, and only family could call him Gimpy. But it was just kind of like a feeling of love, you know. It wasn't, they weren't making fun of them. They were making they were laughing with them, and that's the one thing you have to that I learned and appreciated over the years.
And these people. What now? Okay, so tell me about your family right now. Obviously, that was many years ago, tell me about these people and their relations now.
Well, they're mostly most of them are passed away, as a matter of fact. Now, I've learned what passed away meant, and that's what all of them are. My mom passed away, my stepdaddy passed away, all, you know, the Gimp and Hump and everyone, they've all gone on to that that stardust in the sky. This is another element of the play. Toward the end of the play, I irritated just about everybody I knew. I asked him, what do you think happens after you die? And so I got a lot of different responses, and so that kind of, I worked that into the play too, you know, what is God and what happens, what does happen to you?
So Richard, I asked you if you would bring us a few monologues from the play itself, and we've heard one already. Are you prepared to do another after the break?
Yes, sure.
Okay. Oh, excellent, excellent. And so just to reintroduce, this is Richard Camp, who has many, many credits to his name, but we know him from the artistic direction of the Ojai Art Center Theater. And now, as far as the Ojai Performing Arts Theater, we've got that. He's actually working with that theater as well. But not only that, I mean, Richard has been a playwright for years. Playwriting credits include Diamonds, directed by none other than Harold Prince in the Circle in the Square in New York. Bless Your Heart at the Ojai Art Center Theater that we covered actually on this program and was sold out for weeks. American Beauties at Princeton's MacArthur Theater. Cuckoo Bird, Richard wrote and directed at the Vortex Theater in New York. Waiting for Garbo at L.A. Colony Studio Theater. Credo at L.A. Odyssey Theater with Gene Smart. So, you know, as we mentioned in the introduction, a three-time Emmy nominee and Emmy winner as well. And it always amazes me, Richard, you know, the talent that you have in Ojai, you know, you and your wife and the people that are in the performing arts in Ojai is astounding. It's astounding. It's a little gem of creative energy.
I agree.
Yeah. And so let's go to quick break. Richard Dugan, yeah, let's go to quick break. When we get back from the break, we are sampling little bits and pieces from Richard Camp's new show that he wrote and actually stars in, one-man show called Lordy Mercy. And we're finding out that Richard has Southern, way deep, deep Southern roots. And these roots are the subject of the play, which is a laugh-out-loud comedy. Don't turn that down. Back in a minute.
But thank you, help.
Welcome back. I'm talking to Richard Camp, who I've had on the program a number of times as artistic director of Ojai Art Center Theater, and he is affiliated now with Ojai Performing Arts Theater, and he has written a play for Ojai Performing Arts Theater called Lordy Mercy, and it's about growing up in the Deep South, which he did, and about some of the characters in his life, and I guess what makes it funny is, and poignant, I'm learning, is that the people that he was growing up around all had different kind of interesting foibles. As Richard says in the play, they were deformed in some way. And now we learn also that Richard himself has had an issue with his hearing over the years. And Richard Dugan, our producer, mentioned, isn't that amazing that, you know, Richard has gone into the word in his career, as a person who has hearing issues, he is so focused.